KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, director Paul Greengrass, has bought a documentary-style form to docudrama. His films, of course, including Bloody Sunday, United 93, and with the Jason Bourne films he's directed, The Bourne Supremacy and The Bourne Ultimatum, he's brought a kind of direct, gritty finesse that makes those films even far more fascinating to watch. Paul, thanks, first of all, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, if you will, for the audience, just tell them what Bourne Ultimatum is about.
Well, Bourne Ultimatum is the third in the trilogy of Bourne movies. Obviously, Doug Liman kicked things off with Bourne Identity, and then they kindly asked me to join, and I Matt and I did Supremacy, and then that brings us to Ultimatum. And it felt to all of us when we started that, you know, here was a franchise that had developed, you know, very successfully by keeping questions about Bourne's identity underpinning the drive of the first two movies, and that in this one we had to provide answers. And it you know, it comes down to that critical issue. You know, identity is more than just a name. If I told you my name, it wouldn't tell you anything about me. You know, what Bourne's in search of is his moral identity. What kind of a man was he? How did he come Jason Bourne? You know, what were the circumstances that led him to assuming that identity? And that's really the quest that underpins this film.
Based on an amazing book you wrote 20 years ago with Peter Wright, Spycatcher, I thought you'd be a natural for these because that book deals with infiltration and paranoia and espionage. And the Bourne books are all about the Cold War. And one of the great things about the book Spycatcher is that, like the movie, Spycatcher sort of gave the lie to the myth of MI5 and James Bond, and sort of showed basically how little British intelligence knew and how easy it was to infiltrate.
Spycatcher was a tremendous cause célèbre at the time. I mean, you know, we have a particular kind of secretive type of government in Britain. You know, of all the mature democracies, it's easily the most centralized and secretive. And the problem was that by the time you got to the sort of mid-1980s, you were having repeated battles, if you like, all of which were around the central question of where do you draw the frontiers between the legitimate demands of journalistic inquiry and, you know, a citizen's right to freely understand what's done in his or her name and the legitimate demands of national security that obviously a government requires. And where you draw that boundary is difficult and contentious and, of course, changes in each generation, you know. And also there was this other aspect that in a way kind of sex was the great fixation in certainly in Britain in the 60s. You know, by the 80s, spies were the kind of modern pornography of the time, if you like. And, you know, governments, particularly under Margaret Thatcher, would get terribly protective and terribly, it was like a sort of guilty secret. You know, they're our spies and you're not allowed to know about them. And this is something secret that we do in secret. And so when this elderly man decided to write his memoirs, which actually were in their way quite thoughtful and rather insightful, I felt, about the kind of paranoia of the Cold War, they were really memoirs from the trenches of the Cold War. That's essentially what they were. You know, the government kind of had a nervous breakdown and started to try and ban it left, right and centre across the world. And then that, of course, became a much more important issue. I mean, the book was one thing, but the attempt by Margaret Thatcher's government to enforce a ban across the world was really overreaching where those boundaries should sit. And obviously I was very lucky to have some great allies. You know, we fought that case and eventually won it. And in the process, this rather obscure book, which is what it was, became this kind of fantastic cause célèbre and international bestseller. But after that, and it's been 20 years, there were a few times that I thought about doing something in the world, you know, the world of spies and espionage, and actually never did it. And then I did do the Bourne movies. And funny enough, as you asked that question, I suddenly realized that what attracted me to the Bourne movies was that here you had, you know, Spycatcher, which is very much a Cold War story. Here you had Robert Ludlum's books, which were absolutely Cold War stories. I mean, the character Jason Bourne is drawn from Cold War fiction, absolutely. And yet the brilliance of Doug Liman's concept for Bourne Identity was that you would shift the character of Jason Bourne from its Cold War context and place it in a new century with new attitudes and new ideas. And lo and behold, you have a new contemporary espionage thriller. And that's actually what has been most interesting to me in building this franchise.
It's the tribute, I guess, as director Paul Greengrass. His new film is The Bourne Ultimatum. I find myself thinking about Spycatcher, and I don't mean to belabor this, just because that whole opening sequence with Patty Clark very much brought it back to mind, which is why I went and reread it as soon as the movie was over, because I just thought, well, this is you integrating your interests and your affinity for this kind of material into the Bourne movie.
Of course, that was my background, you know, many, many years ago, 25 years ago. That's where I started. I mean, it was a sort of, I've always worked in television to begin with, in at Granada in Britain, which is a small independent, or was then, it's not now, it's rather a large corporation. But in those days,
It was the other network.
It was the other network, but Granada had a particular quality. It was quite subversive. It was very non-metropolitan. That's very important in Britain, you know. It gave it a sort of sassy edge as a station, and it encouraged people to make trouble and to be contentious. And also, because of the history of the company, its roots lay in British documentary realism in terms of film. I mean, in fact, the title of the program that I worked for, World in Action, was drawn from the great documentary maker John Grierson, who used the phrase, you know, the purpose of film is to see the world in action. And that's where I was brought up. I spent 10 years there, my 20s, you know, traveling the world and essentially making films about the world in action. And you know, I became known, I suppose, for I did more than a few films about espionage one way or another. That's how I met Peter Wright, in fact, because I made a program about him. And that's where I developed my interest in Northern Ireland, because one of the very first films I made was in Northern Ireland, and I made many films there. You know, it gave me the things really that I've always built on in terms of making films. It gave me, and I was trained, and it was a very rigorous place to learn how to make films, robust and, you know, tough. You know, it taught me that the first duty of filmmaking is to observe. It sounds simple, but it's the thing that people so often don't do, to watch and capture. Secondly, that you had to have a point of view, but there was a difference between a point of view and being a propagandist. You know, you had a responsibility to the truth. You had a responsibility to the facts. You had a responsibility not to propagandize.
But I would say that your point of view, and I don't mean to call you a propagandist at all, but I would say from watching your films, one gets a very strong sense of your politics and who you are.
As I say, I've always wanted films, the films that I make, to be contemporary. I've always wanted to engage with the way the world is. I think perhaps when I was younger, my films did tend to be a little sloganizing, to be fair, or simple, I'd say. Not sloganizing, but just simplistic in their characterizations, probably simplistic in their conception of how institutions work and how human behavior works. You know, simplistic probably in the way that I handled screenplays and actors, and that's just finding your voice, you know. Voice is tremendously important, I think, in when you direct. And it's not, I don't, unless you're kind of, you know, one of those very rare cinematic geniuses, I don't think that your voice is something that's absolutely comes to you at the beginning. I think it's something that you evolve and find. Its components are very often the core of your identity, if you like. But as you become more experienced, you find the things that you can do. And one of the things that I found along the way is, you know, a belief in complexity. Bloody Sunday, you know, is an absolute classic case in point. You know, I wanted to make a film that took this event that in many ways was the most contentious event, you know, in recent British and Irish history. It sort of symbolised everything that had gone wrong. It was that moment when the conflict was absolutely irrecoverable. And what I wanted to do was to create a film that didn't take sides in any way, but sought to create a picture of that event that all of us, wherever we live in Britain and Ireland, could look at and say, well, it must have been something like that. So it would be recognisable to everyone rather than partisan. And that's something, you know, that I've always taken with me. It's a sense of, you know, trying to get to how things really are. And I carried that forward, obviously, in United 93. And yeah, in a certain extent, it's in the Bourne movies too, you know. They're very different movies. They're commercial films, and I make them out of a sense of fun, which is not something that I knew that I had as a filmmaker until quite recently. Truly, absolutely true. I mean,
well, see, I would ask you this because, by the way, it's the treatment, I guess, of director Paul Greengrass. We're talking about a number of films. His new film is The Bourne Ultimatum. There's a great scene in Bloody Sunday where there's a crowd of people moving, and there's a lightness to that. It's almost like watching a parade at one point. And I felt that there was a real sense of observation, which is what you're talking about, but I think whimsy as well, which gives a lot of weight to when things really go horribly wrong, and they do, then there's a point of contrast for that. So I think you'd found that ability to contrast, and it really comes to the fore in Bloody Sunday.
Well, I hope so, because, of course, you know, I mean, one of the things I often say on a film set, and I said it, I mean, you know, a million times on that film, is we mustn't play the end. You know, nobody knew when they turned up on that day, soldiers or demonstrators for that matter, nobody knew that what was going to happen would happen. There may have been people around who had fears and anxieties around it, but the broad mass of people were there on a, you know, to have a march and to make their point, and, you know, to a certain extent, it, you know, it was the off-stated carnival atmosphere. And somewhere what that film was about was capturing the macabre dance that occurs when you get conflict in a civil society.
But that conflict that you're talking about in a civilized society can be found in basically everything I've seen of yours.
I think it's probably true. And it does go back to those old days. You know, I spent a lot of time in places like that. I saw, obviously, in Northern Ireland, but not just there, a lot of that kind of stuff. And it, if you see what things, how things actually play in reality, it gives you an inner sense of what's truthful. And then I suppose it's the sense of your own tempo. I think all directors, it's funny, as the older I've got, the more I've realised that tempo is a very, very important part of the kind of mysterious business of making a film, because it is sort of mysterious and anarchic and odd and impossible to predict. But rather like the conductor calling in the orchestra, that's definitely probably at the core of what you do. You have some sense of tempo, and you try and make everyone match that, you know. And somewhere that tick is in all, I think, my sort of more mature films, really.
My guest is director Paul Greengrass. We're talking about his films. His new film, of course, is The Bourne Ultimatum. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is director Paul Greengrass. We're talking about I think his sensibility, his new film, of course, as director, is A Bourne Ultimatum. But as you were talking before the break, one of the things that came to mind for me, and it's come to mind in watching a number of your pieces, is the way chaos plays so central a part in the things that seem to attract you.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And in a way, it's central, I think, to what the process is. It's this paradox that I think works in for me in terms of, you know, I can only talk about my process, where you're trying to bring very, very close together two instincts that are, in fact, pulling in opposite directions. And those instincts are, on the one hand, the forces of order and structure, and those are screenplay, preparation, storyboard, previs, you know, planning, scheduling, you know, all the elements that you absolutely have to have in any film, large or small. Otherwise, it's just, you know, you're literally making it up on the day and it'll just all become a kind of chaotic nonsense. You know, you've got to have structure and order at some level. On the other hand, what you're also looking for is freedom, improvisation, the moment, the thing that happens in front of your camera that you didn't predict,
The dramatic truth, if you will.
Yeah, the dramatic, the kind of the consequence of bringing together those elements, like a chemical reaction, and then when they come together, be they actors, story, and location, and then the reaction takes place, and you've somehow got to capture that. And so I always try to put my films right where those two contrary impulses meet, and I think that's actually what gives them their sort of inner drive, I suppose, because they've...
And turmoil, right. Too.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think I crave it. You know, I think I'm not happy unless there is that dynamic going on, and that dynamic should address something contemporary. You know, because when you look at, yeah, say the last three or four films, yeah, Bloody Sunday, United 93, well, there you can see what they're about. They're about addressing the way the world is. But then if you take the Bourne films, what I love about the franchise most of all is it's at a time when so much of the mainstream of Hollywood deals in, and understandably so, in fantasy worlds and comic book universes and superhero characters and characters with magic powers and all the rest of it. Here you have this franchise that's urgent and contemporary. Yeah, it's fun. It's entertainment. We all love it. It, you know, it's meant to be sort of turbocharged, if you like, at some level. But it is authentically contemporary, dealing with a contemporary landscape, dealing with contemporary themes. And I think that's really, really important because I'm speaking, you know, as a reasonable newcomer to Hollywood. It wasn't where you would have thought somebody like me would have ended up. It certainly was never in my plan. But you know, I've enjoyed making the films that I've made there, and I've enjoyed those mainstream films because I think it's important that here you have this, you know, the inner furnace of Hollywood, which is what the franchise movies are. You know, they're the great industrial wheels that drive an ecosystem. You know, without the franchise movies working commercially, so many other films that are more marginal, you know, that I might want to make next year will be much more difficult. So we need those franchise films to be good, and we need them to reach their audiences, and we need them not to be bland, and we need them not to be predictable. And I think in that sense, I'm very proud of what, you know, what the Bourne franchise does. He is a new kind of espionage character. I mean, the character of the spy is, you know, its literary roots are right back through the previous century. But here's a character who, you know, is not like the others. He has values. He's got complexity. He's got darkness, the dark past, you know, the hopes for the future. He is full of... He doesn't have the outdated macho attitudes of the other characters. You know, you're never going to see Jason Bourne in a Bourne movie looking at, you know, a woman coming out of the sea with a bikini on. It's just couldn't happen. Do you know what I mean? That's just a tiny example of where the franchise goes, you know?
It's the treatment, my guess, is director Paul Greengrass. We're talking about a number of things, but his new film happens to be The Bourne Ultimatum. One of the things, too, that I find so fascinating about your movies, and I've only seen a few of the pieces for World in Action, is that there's often a claustrophobia there's an intensity that comes from being in very close quarters, and that tension that brews from that, these opposing forces, if you will, being in close quarters. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how conscious you are of that.
Very. That's evolved, actually, over the years. When I was young, we were always told to be back and tight. That was what you were told. Get back, get tight. Because that way, you observe, but you're not a participant, you know, in terms of you and your camera. But as I started to evolve, that didn't feel quite right. I mean, I still do like to be, you know, back and tight, and, you know, there's a lot of that sort of stuff there. But what I wanted in the end was to be kinetic. And I think that's just down to your inner I wanted to be on the shoulder of the action. And I think that's true in Bloody Sunday or 93 as it is in the Bourne films. And I think that's to do with, I think it's probably, you know, as you sort of mature a little bit as a filmmaker, I realized that I had to be engaged. I had to have a camera that was the me of it, that was engaged. And somewhere a camera that's engaged, that's fighting in it for access to what's happening, I think is why, you know, I often look at my wrist and think that's good, that bit works, and, you know, that shot works, and if I'm on set, I'll be saying, yeah, that's good, or that's not good, because I don't feel I've struggled to get there to see that, and it looks like it's been planned so I can. So it's not a point of view, really. It's I've loaded the dice.
One of the things that you do that's antithetical to action films in the last 20 years or so, they tend to be theatrical. We pull back and we get kind of proscenium arch. Mm-hmm. And yours is a very aggressive, pushy action style that certainly Doug Liman did a bit of that in the first Bourne film, but yours is much more so. I mean, it's kind of jabbing and pushing its way into the fights almost. Mm-hmm. But not only that, but even in the conversational scenes, it's really aggressive and restless and pushing into everything.
Mm-hmm. I like to see films that feel like I open the door and that's the world that I'm living in, and, you know, when I open the newspaper or watch the TV, or we all have some sense of the pace of life at the moment. I'm talking about, you know, the sense of danger. You know, it's ever present now, isn't it? We've all got it.
Sure.
That sense that we're hurtling very, very fast. It's a below level, below the radar unease that I think is so marked in our culture, and obviously particularly post 9/11.
It's the treatment, I guess, of director Paul Greengrass. I guess I ask these questions about your style, particularly in these big action films, is because there tends to be a grandeur in the way the action is staged in action films. And you're clearly, if not a student, or if you are, you don't bring any of that to the films at all.
All directors, and I absolutely put myself in that, there's a shameless side to you. I didn't actually know I had it until I came to Bourne Supremacy, is the truth of it. You know, but that was part of why I wanted to do it. I mean, I wouldn't have done any movie in Hollywood. Do you know what I mean? I wanted to do the Bourne movies because it, you know, because of the what we talked about, the strong contemporary landscape, and I felt I could do something with that very contemporary new character. But also a sense of fun, a sense of adventure, a desire to entertain. I'd never ever tried to make a film in that spirit, and I found I enjoyed it. It gave me tremendous pleasure, and of course, there's the vanity of wanting to strut your stuff, you know, is an important part of this thing. You know, you go off for a year to make the Bourne ultimatum. And it's true, there wasn't a day that went past that people didn't come up and say, I'm so, you know, I so love that franchise. You know, I can't wait to see the film. And of course, you want to please people. You want to give people a great ride, you know, and there's a sort of shameless tub-thumping quality to it, which I rather enjoy. But interestingly, and I think it was one of the issues absolutely at the core of making Bourne Ultimatum, here's a franchise, and Doug Liman is the man who conceived this, incidentally. Here's a franchise built on a collision between a mainstream Hollywood sensibility and a sort of indie, slightly European, you know, sensibility. The two collide, and out of it you get Bourne Identity. You know, fresh.
Sure, right down to the use of basically blacks and grays and dark blues as a palette.
Absolutely.
And very few primary colors.
Yeah. But the problem you have when you come to making Ultimatum is the franchise is obviously at this point, or, you know, when we started to make it a year ago, very, very successful commercially. How do you get the indie bit of it to punch its weight? Because the Hollywood bit of it clearly is now vastly bigger than it was when, you know, when Identity was started. And that's really what led me to conceive of the sequences in the film they are, that are very long, flowing action sequences. And I wanted to put them in places, physical places, where we couldn't operate like a Hollywood film. Because the great danger when you start to operate, particularly as a big Hollywood unit, because you've got some decent resources, is, you know, classically you come to wherever you're going to shoot and you put a barrier up and you put your sets in the middle and you put the wagons around the sets, and, you know, it's a nice, safe, secure, efficient, economically sensible model, and away you go and you shoot, you know. The problem, and you get advantages from that, obviously, in terms of, you know, economies of scale and so forth, and, you know, consistency of working. But you pay a price for that. And the price you pay is that you become cut off from the world around you, you know. And that is particularly important because the indie sort of living off the land, guerrilla style freshness of the Bourne franchise, if you lose that, then you lose everything. But how do you keep that when the franchise is clearly very successful? And that's really what led me to go, well, what we need to do here is conceive of much, much longer sequences and set them in places where we can't operate like a big Hollywood movie. So if you, for instance, if you go and, you know, have a 12-minute, 15-minute sequence in Waterloo Station in London, or Tangier, or, you know, to a certain extent, streets of New York, you just simply can't lock those places down. You can't seal yourself away. And in fact, it forced us as a unit to behave in a kind of guerrilla-style operation. I mean, on Waterloo, actually, the unit base was a mile away, and we would very often be a tiny, tiny unit. You know, it would be just a handful of us on the station trying to shoot incognito so that the crowds didn't build up, you know, and the same in Tangier and the same in New York. And I think it made it a nightmare from the point of view of logistics, you know. But what we gained from it, I think, is all the vitality and the vibrancy of and the sort of honesty of the franchise. You know, it still feels, I think, like it was found rather than it was a pre-packed airline meal. And the truth is, it was found, you know. It was a lot of it on the day. I mean, you know, you have a story and a sense of where you're going, but, you know, the process was essentially indie at heart, and I loved that about it. You know, I mean, you live on your nerves, but it was great fun.
Well, Paul, we're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this, and please come back again.
I will do. Will do. Bye.
My guest is director Paul Greengrass. His new film is The Bourne Ultimatum. Our technical director, KCRW in Santa Monica, is Mario Diaz, with technical assistance from Leszek Wojciech at Carnegie Recording Studios. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm itching for a fight. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.